next hour, why this earworm works.
And this is easy to remember.
I'm on fire with desire. I can handle half the tenors in a male voice choir. Let's do it. Let's do it tonight.
Why music has the power to move us.
We made it to the kitchen, the kitchen, the kitchen. We made it to the kitchen. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
And reconnect when nothing else can.
When the record finished, she said, "That was nice, Bill, wasn't it?" And we hadn't spoken for 2 days.
I'm Dr. Alexis Kirk from Plymouth University's Interdisciplinary Centre for Computer Music Research.
And I'm Belinda Dixon from BBC Radio Devon.
And for the next hour, we'll be exploring how music can help with your day.
Wake up, pull curtains, do your diary. Let the dog out, have breakfast, take tablets, feed dog.
And how radio makers can really make a difference.
The power of radio, the power of music, anything that increases an individual with dementia and their engagement with music, dialogue, has got to be good.
Now that is one of those songs, isn't it? So catchy, you'll be singing it all day.
But how and why does it work? Judy Edworthy is Professor of Applied Psychology at Plymouth University.
Earworms is a popular name for a song that gets stuck in your head or a jingle or something like that. Usually quite a short snippet of music that gets stuck in your head and it just sort of swirls around there. We do now know some things that cause earworms to happen, and they tend to be related to the complexity or simplicity of the music. Things like how singable it is. So if a song is going to become an earworm, that is something that everybody recognises and tends to get stuck in your head when you hear it, or even if you're doing something else and it suddenly pops into your head, it will be easy to sing. It will have simple kind of intervals between the notes. We will rock you. As an example of a singer that has created a lot of earworms, Freddie Mercury would be a good example. We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. They're both quite prominent earworms, and both of them are, obviously, they're him singing. He sings quite high. The notes are very close together, and it's easy to sing. Those are the kinds of characteristics that will become earworms. If you look at it from a more psychological point of view, it's getting that sound into memory. Now, if it is simple and short and straightforward, it will get into memory more quickly than if it's complex. And this is what a songwriter needs to do, of course. They need to get something in your head that makes you remember a bit of it, but enough to make it interesting enough for you to go back and hear it again and listen for more. A song is nothing without a listener.
Wake up, pull curtains, do your diary, let the dog out, have breakfast, take tablets, feed dog. Do the dish, no, clean your teeth and take a shower. Get dressed and walk the dog. Do the dishes, clean the cooker, brush dog.
That's Doreen Abbott from Plymouth, who has Alzheimer's. I collaborated with her on turning her daily routine into a song to explore whether we can use music to help people remember things they need to do.
So might that kind of technique be successful? Professor Edworthy again.
It allows you to examine your activities as you're going because, of course, it's an earworm. It's stuck in your head. It will be swirling around anyway. So you kind of check with yourself whether you've done it by going through the song.
And having learned her list, what did Doreen make of the process?
I think the general idea is very good because the words do come back. But the idea of routines, and if you can put it to music, is fine, but it's a bit difficult to know how quite you'd... Because I think it ought to be an already known tune and then put your own bits to it, unfortunately.
What the research has shown is that if you use tunes that people already know, then initially they can learn it much more quickly. But if you use a tune that someone's not come across before and you have these words, say the day plan over the top, it may take them longer to learn the tune, but it will become more deeply embedded in their mind.
Specific to those words.
Exactly.
Rather than revert to the original words.
Which brings us back to why we remember.
And the tricks we use to aid memory, as Professor Edworthy explains.
If you look at the area of mnemonics, now, loosely defined, a mnemonic is really a verbal memory aid, and it can be a rhyme or a rhythm or even a song. There's no doubt that these kind of vocal verbal memory aids work, and we all use them, actually. And I think that because they stick in the mind a bit better than just straightforward text or prose, you will be more resistant to forgetting these kinds of things as your cognitive functions decline.
We're quite used to the idea of using songs that help teach children the colours of the rainbow, for example, mm-hmm. is one. But what we could be talking about here is using songs and music to help teach adults as well.
I don't think that that's as unusual as one might think. Adults use mnemonics, for example, which are rhymes without music, to learn quite a lot of things. Medical students certainly would use it to learn various bits of what they have to learn. And I would imagine that many professions use mnemonics of some sort or another to try and remember things.
And presumably advertisers are very aware of all this, aren't they? Because they use them a lot, don't they?
Yes, many jingles also mimic the words that the advertisers are trying to tell you. Now, one obvious one is just the simple rhythm of webuyanycar.com. And there are other ones. There's the famous old Smash advert of for mash, get smash. So we're doing this all the time because music and language are connected. Music has a much more important and significant rhythmic element, but there is rhythm in language too.
So we often remember the words to catchy tunes, but can the words themselves be catchy?
Stop pouting, stop shouting, you know I pulled a muscle when I did that grouting. I can't do it tonight.
I think many of us can remember quite a lot of the words of Victoria Wood's song Let's Do It. Now you think how cleverly she uses the words and she sets up expectation not only about the content, but she does it through the rhythm of the song.
Let's do it, share a night of wild romance. Frenetic, poetic, this could be your last big chance. To quote Milton, to eat Stilton, to rolling gay abandon on the tufted Wilton. Let's do it tonight.
Let's take one of the lines where she says, to eat Stilton, to quote Milton. Right, so we've got a rhyme already, and then the next line is to rolling gay abandon on the tufted Wilton. But she sets up her joke by the rhythm of the song. Basically, the timing is kind of done for her. The songs are particularly good because they allow the time to set up the expectation, and then you get the exposition of the joke. And she does it over and over again, of course, in that particular song.
So we've got the timing, the rhythm. We've also got the rhyming. They help us understand it, they help us predict it.
Yes.
Could they also help us remember it?
I think they can help us remember it, yes. Because for one thing, if you're anticipating a rhyme, it does cut down the number of possibilities of what the words might be. So even when you're listening to something that you actually know, you can still anticipate. So Victoria Wood's songs, for example, are still funny. In fact, they're almost funnier when you know what the words are going to be because you're anticipating it. I imagine that most of the famous stories handed down tend to be written in some kind of simple metre, or they're more poems than they are stories. And of course, the rhymes help you to remember.
Frida and Barry sat one night. The sky was clear, the stars were bright. The wind was soft, the moon was up. Frida drained her cocoa cup. She licked her lips, she felt sublime. She switched off Gardner's question time. Barry cringed in fear and dread as Frida grabbed his tie and said, let's do it while the mood is right. I'm feeling appealing, I've really got an appetite. I'm on fire with desire. I can handle half the tenors in a male voice choir. Let's do it tonight. But he said, I can't do it, I can't do it. I don't believe in too much sex. This fashion for passion turns us into nervous wrecks. No derision, my decision. I'd rather watch the spinners on the television. I can't do it, I can't do it tonight. So she said, let's do it till our hearts go boom. Go native, creative, living in the living room. This far jolly, is jolly. Bend me over backwards on me hostess trolley. Let's do it, let's do it tonight. But he said, I can't do it, I can't do it. My heavy breathing days have gone. I'm older, feel colder, it's other things that turn me on. I'm imploring, I'm boring, let me read this catalogue on vinyl flooring. I can't do it tonight. So she said, let's do it, have a crazy night of love. I'll strip a bear, I'll just wear stilettos and an oven glove. Don't starve a girl of a palaver, dangle from the wardrobe in your balaclava. Let's do it tonight. But he said, I can't do it, I can't do it. I know I'd only get it wrong. Don't angle for me to dangle. My arms have never been that strong. Stop pouting, stop shouting. You know I pulled a muscle when I did that grouting. I can't do it tonight. Let's do it, share a night of wild romance. Frenetic, poetic, this could be your last big chance. To quote Milton, to eat Stilton's, a rolling gay abandon on the tufted Wilton. Let's do it tonight. I can't do it. Can't do it, I've got other little jobs on hand. Don't grouse around the house, I've got a busy evening planned. Stop nagging, I'm flagging. You know as well as I do that the pipes want lagging. I can't do it tonight. Let's do it while I'm really in the mood. Three cheers, it's years since I caught you even semi-nude. Get drastic, gymnastic, wear your baggy white fronts with a loose elastic. Let's do it tonight. I can't do it, I can't do it. I must refuse to get undressed. I feel silly, it's too chilly to go without me thermal vest. Don't choose me, don't use me. My mother sent a note to say you must take, excuse me. I can't do it tonight. Let's do it, I feel I absolutely must. I won't exempt you, want to tempt you, want to drive you mad with lust. No cautions, just contortions, smear an avocado on me lower portions. Let's do it tonight. I can't do it, I can't do it, it's really not my cup of tea. I'm harassed, embarrassed, I wish you hadn't picked on me. No barter, non-starter, I feel about as sensuous as Jimmy Carter. I can't do it tonight. Let's do it, I really want to run amok. Let's wiggle, let's jiggle, let's really make the rafter the rock. Be mighty, be flighty, come and melt the buttons on me flame-proof nighty. Let's do it tonight. Let's do it, I really want to rant and rave. Let's go, cause I know just how I want you to behave. Not bleakly, not meekly, beat me on the bottom with a woman's weekly. Let's do it tonight.
Victoria Wood proving with Let's Do It that melody, rhythm, rhyme and comedy can all aid memory.
So why are we focusing on all that? I'm Alexis Kirk from Plymouth University.
And I'm Belinda Dixon from BBC Radio Devon.
And we've been working together to look at music, memory and ways to make radio more dementia-friendly.
So what exactly is being dementia-friendly? It's simply helping people with dementia and their carers feel understood, respected, valued and supported.
And can radio help with that? Paul Dunnery is the Operations Director for the Alzheimer's Society. He thinks it can because it's such a significant feature of many people's lives.
I think it's really key and really crucial for people in terms of thinking about what time it is, what the weather is outside, the season, what's coming up in the rest of the day or the rest of that week. Just some pointers and reminders about what's going on.
Okay, let's look at some specifics.
Belinda, have you ever noticed how even at a noisy cocktail party, you can just about concentrate on the person talking to you despite the chatter?
Alexis, hang on. I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty following what you're saying.
I was saying, Belinda, have you ever noticed how even at a noisy cocktail party, you can just about concentrate on the person talking to you despite the chatter?
Well, yes, but it is hard work.
This ability of the brain to filter out other voices is known as the cocktail party effect. Professor Sue Denham, the director of Plymouth University's Cognition Institute, explains.
The cocktail party effect has become known is to do with the problem of how we disentangle sounds coming from different sound sources around us. People with dementia also have problem with dual tasks, so doing more than one thing at once. And what we're describing is a need to do more than one thing at once.
So this, for example, is a really bad idea.
My name is Belinda Dixon, and I work for BBC Radio Devon.
And all this year, we've been trying to make Devon more dementia-friendly. So would that actually be quite hard to understand?
Well, it was very hard to understand. And what you find when you listen to something like that is you have to keep flipping from one to the other. But yes, of course, that's almost impossible.
So that's people talking over each other. What about this, though?
Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes, gonna make you zombie.
How hard is it to absorb information when it's contained in speech that's being delivered over music, and especially when there are lyrics too?
Sorry?
I said, how hard is it to absorb information when it's spoken over lyrics?
Good question. Difficult, but it is possible. Professor Sue Denham again.
I think that we're constantly building models of the sound sources in our heads. So if I was listening to music on the radio, I would have a kind of a representation, a model in my head of the kinds of sounds I was expecting from that music. If you started speaking over it, I would have to make another model of this different sound source, which I shouldn't confuse with the music, because if I do, the messages are going to get really muddled. So I need to separate out the sounds coming from you to build another model of which help me make sense of the sounds that come from you. So it's a really complex process, and we have to do it really fast, and we have to do it all the time, because this is how we interact with the world around us.
This will probably sound actually familiar to people, some people who don't have a dementia, that sense of distraction of things that are going on in the background, or not quite being able to make out who's speaking and what's going on there. Is it a case that this is something that affects people with dementias, but also it would affect other people as well?
I think it affects everybody, actually, to varying degrees. And it's well known that older people, even if their hearing is perfect, they often report having problems in noisy situations. And it may well be something to do with this need to separately pull apart the different patterns that you're hearing into these models, that I call them, of the sounds in the world. And I think we all have problems with this. We talk about cocktail parties, but when we actually go to the cocktail party, it's pretty hard work. It's not something that we find all that easy.
Professor Sue Denham, you're listening to Music, Memories and Making Radio with Belinda Dixon from BBC Radio Devon.
And Alexis Kirk from Plymouth University.
And we've been working together on ways to make the mechanics of radio more dementia-friendly. So, people talking over each other and over song lyrics both came up in our research into ways to make radio better for people with dementias. We also heard about Doreen Abbott's memory tunes. And Alexis, how does that fit in with your wider research?
Well, we're putting together a 5-year collaboration inspired by the work with Doreen, and we've now laid the groundwork for phase two of the dementia-friendly broadcasting research.
So talking is one thing, another factor is music.
And how particular songs bring back memories of particular times, as explained by Judy Edworthy, Professor of Applied Psychology at Plymouth University.
In your youth, particularly between the ages of about 18 and 25, you're very susceptible to memories. It's a thing called a reminiscence bump, and a lot of things you remember about your life are around that time. It's probably because you're growing up and you're becoming, you know, moving from being a child to an adult. But the other reason will be that if you listen over and over again to a song, it will move from short-term memory into long-term memory. And once it's there, it's pretty much stored. It often needs a trigger to bring it back to life. But once you've heard the trigger, it will bring that song back. And also, not just how that song goes in terms of its music and lyrics, but memories around that music, such as what you were doing at the time, whether you were in love with someone, or whether you'd just gone off to war, or you'd just split up with someone, or you just started a new job, all those things. So you've got a memory of the song, which is about the structure of the song and its lyrics, but you've also got a memory of that song in terms of its personal meaning to you. Those are two different types of memory.
So that's why some tunes take us right back. It's the same for Terry and Mike Channon from Exmouth. Mike was diagnosed with dementia in his 50s.
Music, I need music.
When he's had his concerts on, he's a different person. Completely different person.
You need cool air. Baby, I'm not fooling. I'm
gonna... Right, Mike and I got together roughly about 12, 13 years ago. We've been married for that time. We're both second-time marriages. And Mike was fine. And then he started to get a problem in his left hand. And eventually we got onto a very nice professor in Exeter who diagnosed this corticobasal degeneration. And since then, it's been a slow deterioration of the use of his limbs and his memory.
It is awful when you're halfway on a sentence and then this goes and I lose it. And whatever I was going to say is just vanishes into so full of the air. It's horrible.
The sort of problem is really that Mike is only 62 and he's had it now for sort of 6 or 7 years. So it's quite surprising how someone so young can have this problem.
Difficult to describe, but when I got the right music on, all is well in the world, and that's I want to be bopping up. I know I can't bop, but I want to, and it takes me back to college days.
I think it would be amazing if you old rockers got together. I found that when he does listen to this sort of music, afterwards he's much more animated and much more happy, much happier.
It's just something that's there, and if the right track comes off, that's from Yes or Deep Purple, I just wonder at it because it's so me. It's what I want to be doing. I would love to be in music.
Mike's interests are Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd.
Iron Butterfly.
Mop the Hoople. They're a completely, completely different style of music to me. So I tend to record concerts for him from the television and then make him a cup of coffee and go and leave him. Not totally leave him, but, you know, leave him to watching it.
Music has got something special.
And as Mike said, as well as memories, music also gives us all something else, a sense of self. Paul Dunnery, Operations Director for the Alzheimer's Society.
To remember songs from the past is so useful for people because not only does it help them remember the words, but also the memories that go with it as well. And that can bring back key emotions for people, good memories about times gone past, and grounds them in who they are as well.
Playing the hits of yesteryear just for you. David Shepherd.
London, you may not be prepared to believe it yet, but summer is coming and fashion is turning its head in that direction. Pretty ways of keeping hair dry while taking a cooling dip are just one indication of the rising sap.
Oh yes, it was the year of the frilly swimming cap. The thing to have, even if you couldn't swim. At least you'd look glamorous in the spectators area. Or paddling your way through the foot bath. If all else failed, you could use it to cover up the verruca. What's the year?
BBC Radio Devon's David Shepherd, who's presented hits and headline shows off and on for 10 years.
And when I was talking to people living with dementias, something they often mentioned was this kind of programme. One couple liked to sing along to it on the way home from an Alzheimer's Society memory cafe.
So it really does bring the past to life. For presenter David, that's no accident.
I wanted this show to be in particular about feeling as though you're back in the mode and back in the day that you're listening. So what we've done is we've populated the show with things that might recreate the full experience of being back in, say, the 1960s. We use a lot of archive audio that people may remember hearing on the radio at the time, seeing on the television. We also use a lot of the jingles of the time, and people, particularly with radio stations, have a real emotional bond with them. And to suddenly hear a jingle on the radio that you remember from, say, the 1960s, it brings back all sorts of dormant emotions and untapped memories, and those are the ones we try and bring back to mind.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice of radio, the people's choice. Music, weather, sports and news, it's radio that matters.
And these programmes are not just about the past, they're about the emotional effect the music can still have in the present.
The music prompts a lot of emotional response. We get memories of the big benchmark moments in life, the births, the deaths. We also celebrate the mundane. We get a lot of, this was the year I got my first Barbie doll, or the year that my dad fell out with the neighbours because he came home with an Austin A60 and they could only afford an A40, for example. Very recently, I played Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel, and that is a song that means so many different things to so many different people. And one lady who contacted the programme knew instantly which year the song came from, because that was her big breakup song. The song that was playing when her first childhood sweetheart gave her the sack. With the music playing in the background, people are often able to tell you a lot more of the intricate details of a situation than they would be if just prompted to speak about it normally. They can often tell you what they were wearing at the time, where they were. It really does somehow awaken a feeling or a sensation or emotion that's been dormant and take you right back there, often whether you like it or not. I mean, her breakup moment was on Staines Bridge, and who really wants to be back there?
Troubled water, I will.
sail on by. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine.
The idea of music conjuring up memories isn't perhaps surprising, but there's also significant scientific research that suggests our brain's musical memories are particularly resilient.
And that people living with dementias find it easier to recall musical memory than things like speech.
Which may explain why the Alzheimer's Society runs hundreds of Singing for the Brain sessions across the country.
Doreen Abbott goes to the Plymouth one.
We sing, obviously, but we do very scientifically based exercises. You know, we stretch across the body, which connects both sides of the brains, as we're told every week. And you really have got to think. We do some tongue twisters. Sometimes we'll leave out the words beginning with S and you clap on an S. Well, of course, everybody makes mistakes, but that just adds to the fun. We often sing Bobby Shafto. It's gone to see. Is it Bobby Shafto? Could be. No, not that one. Something else with B's in. And we put our hands up at the first B and down at the second one. And, of course, you know, you go up and down at the wrong times. And I often watch the carers, even young carers that come in, and they get muddled. And you think, you know, this is amazing because some of the people with dementia are doing it better. Some aren't because they don't know their left from their rights and can't follow. But I think it must help. Because, you know, like the use it or lose it syndrome.
And do you find it helps you?
I like it. Does it help me? How can I tell? But I enjoy it, which is half the problem. And, of course, it gets me out. I meet other people. I mean, it's just like a big family, really, now, because we all know each other.
And do you see it making quite a big difference, a big impact on some of the people there?
I think so, yes. Some do seem to be more forthcoming, perhaps, and so on, because of these activities.
Let's hear a little snippet here. This is Plymouth Singing for the Brain group leader Sarah Chapman, who you will know.
Oh, I know, yes.
Yes. She feels it can make quite a profound difference.
When I first started, we have a chap called Keith, and he was just sitting with his head down. And by the end of the first session, I said, well, goodbye, Keith, that was lovely. And he just looked at me and said, who are you? By the end of the second session, I went and said, hello, Keith, are you all right? But I sang to him. I said, lovely, Keith, we'll see you next week. And he looked up and he sang back and he said, thank you, Sarah, I've had a lovely time. And I was gobsmacked because his daughter said that he was hardly speaking at all.
Does that sound quite familiar, Doreen?
Yes, I think that, you know, often people do come alive with music.
Singing for the Brain taps into a range of songs that are likely to be memorable to certain generations.
We all have our own special tunes, so it set us thinking, could radio feature songs that are particularly meaningful to individuals?
Well, yes, it often does. They're called request shows.
But we went further and we recorded the requests of people living with dementia and their carers at the Plymouth Singing for the Brain session.
They'll feature in a special hour-long request show.
Hello, I'm Dorothy. I'm here this afternoon at the Plymouth Group of Singing for the Brain with my husband Bob. And the song that we would like to hear is one of Barry White's with You're My First, My Last, My Everything.
It says something I want to say to Dorothy.
And it's always stuck in my mind because, you know, in the past I've been in the engineers and I've been all over the place. And it makes me relax, you know.
Good morning, Devon. 7 o'clock now on Friday, the 12th of December. I'm Michael Checker.
It's 9:04. The weather from bbc.co.uk/Devon.
Devon's news at 12. I'm Janine Jansen.
5:30, the headlines with Kevin Stanley.
Yes, just gone 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. Graham's back with you. Weekend is still alive. Don't worry. My job to keep it alive until 1 a.m.
So how many times an hour do you hear those on the radio? Time checks help us get up and keep us on time.
And they came up in conversations with people living with dementia. Here's Doreen Abbott from Plymouth.
One of the morning jobs is to sort of do the calendar and diary and calendar so that then, you know, you cross off the day so you know what the day is and you change the calendars. But the time checks, sometimes I find that I have no clue what I've been doing, and a time check will suddenly think, "Is it? How did it get round there?" Must get on with what I'm supposed to be doing.
So, along with hits and headlines shows, time checks are often examples of how radio can already be, in part, dementia-friendly.
And if presenters are aware of a few minor things, they could be even better. Operations Director for the Alzheimer's Society, Paul Dunnery.
Saying it's 4:10 now, that can be really confusing because it's quite dark at this time. So 4:10 in the evening can be as dark as it is at 4:10 at night. So to differentiate that by just saying it's 4:10 in the morning or it's 4:10 in the afternoon can really highlight for somebody where they are in that day.
So the way people on the radio say the time can make a big difference to those living with dementia. What else can help?
Repeating information came up in conversations with people living with dementias and their carers.
Why is that useful specifically? Professor Sue Denham, the director of Plymouth University's Cognition Institute.
When we listen to anything, if it's something new and we're trying to recognise patterns in these sounds, then of course if the pattern gets repeated, then whatever the activity in our brain is that represents this pattern gets reinforced. And the more it's reinforced, the more we can use our knowledge of that pattern to tell what else is out there and what else is different out there. This repetition, both in speech and in music, is crucial for decoding patterns.
Another factor that came up was keeping radio segments short.
And that's something Plymouth Music Zone has also noticed. Its teams go into residential homes and lead music sessions. The Zone's development manager, Jeannie Robinson.
Sometimes the songs that are longer can be more problematic, so shorter songs work better. It's about attention span. Sometimes that just helps if they're a little bit shorter. And they particularly enjoy songs that they remember from when they were younger. Some of the things that don't work are if there's too much noise, too much chaos going on, so they like it to be quite calm. It can cause agitation if there's a lot of noise or things are too mad and wild and over the top. So although some people will really love that, others will find that quite difficult.
Plymouth Music Zone sessions see people taking a very active role in the music making.
The music leader will lead the songs, but the participants will choose them. And they will sing along, but they'll also play instruments, usually percussion instruments, tambourines and shaky fruit and all sorts of different types of fun instruments that get them to engage and enjoy the singing and music making. Plymouth Music Zone had an independent evaluation carried out by Professor Josie Quinn and Claudia Blandon from Plymouth University, and they visited several of the residential homes and they talked to music leaders and the participants and the carers. They told us that friendships were formed that hadn't existed before. So that thing about reducing loneliness is fantastic with music, and that's true across all the different people that we work with. So it's a universal thing. Music is a wonderful tool for breaking down barriers, helping people make friends, making people feel happy and having fun, which is always really important.
So what music is doing there is bringing people together in activity, which is pretty much what this does.
When I was just a little lad or so, me mammy told me,
away, haul away, we'll haul away, Joe.
That if I didn't kiss the girls, me lips would grow all mouldy.
Away, haul away, we'll haul away, Joe.
Sea shanties are an age-old way of using music to inspire rhythmic work, according to Professor Judy Edworthy from Plymouth University.
Away!
We've always used music to tie physical activities together. For example, sea shanties were used to keep the team in sync when they were pulling in rope. And you have chain gangs who sing too. So tying movement to rhythm is not a new thing, and it's a thing that we should be using. So, for example, when people exercise, they often listen to music which they entrain their steps to it, so they run in time to the music. So it's quite compelling to walk or move in time to a rhythm.
Away!
Haul away, we'll haul for better weather. Away, haul away, we'll haul away, Joe.
And the principles behind this are being used today. Rosie Jones from Exmouth cares for her mum Elsie, who has Alzheimer's.
And she's worked out a gentle way to help her mum through day-to-day actions. She sings to her.
We're going in the kitchen, the kitchen, the kitchen. We're going in the kitchen. When I started looking after Mum, we wanted to find ways to do things that were more positive rather than being negative about what we're doing. And I remembered someone that I saw once who was on the television a while back. And he talked about when you get small children dressed, you don't ever go, shall we get dressed? Because it gives you the option to say no. So instead of which, you say, right, we're going to get dressed now, or we're going to do that. So changing it round so that it's not a negative situation. We have to get Mum dressed every day. She's not hugely keen on the idea, but by making it as fun as we can, by doing it, the songs and repeating, it makes it a positive experience. We made it to the kitchen, the kitchen, the kitchen. We made it to the kitchen. Hooray, hooray, hooray. There's enough negative in having Alzheimer's without adding to it. It's better to find ways to be more positive and make it a better experience for all of us. Mum didn't expect to get Alzheimer's or want Alzheimer's, and it's the Alzheimer's that has made her unable to do things like feed herself. So we find ways to make our lives as positive as possible. It is very hard to watch someone that you love and care for change and to lose the essence of the person that they were. as I say to children that I know, that when I was your age, my mum was like your mum, and she did all the things that your mum does. But now she's got a lot older, it's more like I'm the mum and she's the little girl and I have to look after. But yes, we miss the person that she was. There are glimmers of it sometimes. Generally speaking, because she is a happy person and because the routine is strong, it helps all of us to have as good a life as we can while living with someone with dementia. Gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. But I also know several silly versions of that too. Row, row, row your boat underneath the stream. Ha, ha, fooled you, I'm a submarine. And that makes Mum laugh and makes the carers laugh as well, so that just makes us all feel happier. Betty buys, Mama's going to Betty buys, she's a good girl. Else is going to Betty buys, Betty buys, Betty buys. Else is going to Betty buys, she's a good girl.
Rosie talking about music's power to prompt movement and also keep things positive for her and her mum, Elsie. But can broadcasters use some of the things we've heard about to change the mechanics of radio and really make a difference in terms of understanding and memory? We'll find out in a moment. First, a reminder of the ways songwriters use the mechanics of music to embed tunes in memory.
Somebody coming in. It is always nice to see you, says the man behind the counter to the woman who has come in. She is shaking her umbrella, and I look the other way as they are kissing their hellos, and I'm pretending not to see them, and instead I a story of an actor who had died while he was drinking. It was no one I had heard of, and I'm turning to the horoscope and looking for the funnies when I'm feeling someone watching me, and so I raise my head. She does not really see me, 'cause she sees her own reflection, and I'm trying not to notice that she's hitching up her skirt, and while she's straightening her stockings, her hair has gotten wet.
You're listening to Music, Memories and Making Radio with Belinda Dixon from BBC Radio Devon
and Dr. Alexis Kirk from Plymouth University's Interdisciplinary Centre for Computer Music Research.
We've been working together on making the mechanics of radio more dementia-friendly, and already we've heard how some things help, things like time checks involving days and mentioning whether it's morning or afternoon.
And short segments where key information is repeated.
Request programmes and hits and headlines shows.
But could radio go further? As we've heard, those hits and headlines hours can be fun and beneficial for those with dementias.
Is that the whole story, though? Doreen Abbott enjoys the Guess the Year element, but can she really take part? When the presenter's saying, what's the year? Guess the year from these hits and these headlines.
I don't think I've ever got one.
Do you still enjoy the challenge, though?
Oh, yes, yes.
Of trying
yes.
to work it out?
Well, I don't try and work it out because it's a bit like trying to go up a ladder with no rungs, you know. It's a bit of a useless exercise.
So perhaps broadcasters, as well as featuring Guess the Year shows, could also turn that format on its head. Here's Paul Dunnery from the Alzheimer's Society.
You could really work and help people using those musical cues and clues and events. You could really bring back some very pertinent memories for that individual, and they can share that with their family and their children and the grandchildren and the husband, and they could really involve everybody in bringing together stories from their past.
So that's interesting, Paul, because what normally happens is you get, here's the music of the era, here are the headlines of the times, what was the year? You could almost work it backwards and say the year is going to be 1964. What are your hits and what are your headlines, your personal stories?
Yeah, because I think if we'd asked my gran what year it was, I think she'd really struggle. But if we were to give her the clue and say this is 1947... and it was just after the war, we had a really bad weather that year. We give those clues, we play some music that allows people to centre them in terms of what year, what's going on, and actually help them to explore their own life at that time.
And actually, can radio go further still? As well as bearing people with dementias in mind when making radio shows, could content be designed specifically for them? What about a radio version of the Singing for the Brain sessions? Operations Director for the Alzheimer's Society, Paul Dunnery.
Translating that into the radio and delivering that to a group of people is a really good idea. I think the challenge will be that in a group, you've got the leader who's giving you the verbal cues and the physical cues about when to join in, how to join in. So it's a real challenge to bring some of the what actually happens in a room into somebody's living room.
Now, that notion also finds favour with Ian Sheriff, Plymouth University's lead on dementia, and also the chair of the Prime Minister's Rural Dementia Task and Finish Group.
The power of radio, the power of music, and also if the presenter is aware of some of the issues around dementia and dementia communication, then certainly, if you take the analogy of the Singing for the Brain group, then if we could somehow harness some of that action, some of those emotions, etc., through music, especially in isolated rural communities. So I think there is a role to play, but I'm heartened by some of the things that we discussed. In my book, a really big tick. However, we just need to see how this pans out in the future.
So, broadcasters could do this, and actually, should they? The Alzheimer's Society says that over the next 10 years, there will be 1 million people in the UK living with dementias.
But hang on a minute, Alexis. Not all dementias are the same. Different people are affected in different ways, and also to different degrees and at different stages. You can't make all radio dementia-friendly, surely. And also, should you? Let's hear again from Doreen Abbott from Plymouth, who is living with Alzheimer's.
If it was completely dementia-friendly, and I'm not thinking about my stage of dementia, then nobody else would listen to it, would they? You know, it would be the same as if you made it two-year-old friendly. You'd be talking to a two-year-old and no adults would want to listen.
Looking at the people we've talked to, there's been things, for example, speaking as slowly as possible, repeating things as much as possible. Obviously, if this went to an extreme, you may not even enjoy listening yourself. You want that sort of activity, that buzz, that
normality, in a way.
And actually, Alexis, hasn't she got a point?
Well, you could also argue that as a publicly funded organisation, the BBC has an obligation to underserved communities. So I challenge the BBC to produce regular content for those living with dementias, and also to consider making it easier for people with dementias to access and interact with broadcasts. Let's think creatively as well. Programmes made for those with dementias could also be enjoyed by others too. After all, broadcasting is a creative art. It's always been at the cutting edge of technology. Isn't this the time to start specifically catering for what is a growing section of our population?
I think dementia is probably pushing us to think about this more carefully, but the kinds of measures that would help dementia people would also help other people.
So the academics and some of those living with dementia and their carers have had their say. Now it's over to the broadcasters and you, the audience, to decide what should be done next. Da 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 da